It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll have a special edition of our music series Setlist with a look at the Madison band Building on Buildings.
But first, it's time for our weekly review of state news, the Wisconsin News Roundup.
Early this week, the FBI foiled what could have been a mass shooting at the Milwaukee Masonic Center.
And the latest Marquette Law School poll showed some interesting changes in voters' opinions on Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, and other big political figures.
For those stories and more, we're joined by Robert Menser. He's a storytelling editor for the USA Today Network, and he's based in central Wisconsin. Rob, welcome back.
Hey, great to be here.
Well, bring us up to speed the latest on this FBI arrest earlier this week that broke just a couple days ago.
Yeah, Sami Mohammed Hamze was arrested on Monday on pretty shocking charges that he planned to attack a Masonic Center in downtown Milwaukee with machine guns. On Tuesday, he appeared in federal court, and he said the charges against him are not true. But the feds say that Hamze plotted with two people who were secretly FBI informants to plan the attack. He is quoted in the criminal complaint saying that Masons are the ones who need to be killed, and speaking sort of the language of jihad, and saying specifically that that America will see more such terror attacks. So Hamze is 23 years old. He's a fast food delivery driver. He was arrested after the FBI says he attempted to purchase the machine guns and a silencer for use in the attack. That was an undercover FBI agent, and they took him into custody. So he will face 50 years in prison if convicted. But I think for sure it's something that it's stunning to hear about, and I think it has a it makes people feel uneasy that this plot or potential plot was going on.
And his family and friends are saying this doesn't seem like him. It seems likely that the defense will say this is a guy who was just doing some big talk and ultimately led along this path by FBI informants. Is that probably going to be his defense as we look forward?
Yeah, absolutely right. He himself stated in court that the charges are not true. He doesn't agree with them, and his defense attorneys say that there is another side to the story, that some statements that were captured on a wire or taken out of context, and they're going to make that that presentation in court. And already, absolutely, on social media and just among his friends and family and other folks that see this differently, say that he was set up. He was led down the path by the FBI informants.
However that argument goes, it seems that he was a genuine lone wolf in a way, except for working with a couple informants. He did not seem to claim any affiliation, from what we've seen in the press so far, with a group like ISIS or Al-Qaeda.
That's right. There was there's certainly no evidence that's been presented of that. And that's not, that is not part of the government's case right now. He fits much more closely with a sort of lone wolf model of terror, if indeed this is what was going on.
And this, of course, comes after the San Bernardino attacks in California, and a time where people in the U.S. and Western Europe are really fearful, I think it's fair to say, about future attacks. This is just one more in that steady stream of worries we have.
Yeah, it is hard to know. On the one hand, it should be heartening that this potential attack was busted. But certainly there are legitimate questions, and Muslim communities and just any civil libertarians have legitimate questions to raise as well about the tactics that federal law enforcement uses. And it's nice not to have the counterfactual of what would have happened if this had gone further. But there are a lot of unknowns, and it will be settled in court whether he was talking, whether he was sort of led down this path, or whether he was serious about this. There are some very disturbing statements in the criminal complaint, for sure, that would lead on the side of more seriousness to this.
Well, turning to some other news this week, we have a new Marquette Law School poll coming out. Interesting news on the presidential candidates. What are we seeing? First of all, Rob, on the Republican side of the ticket.
Well, I mean, the Republican side is the interesting one, right? This poll is the first poll that that shows one Donald Trump in the lead for the Republican nomination. He polled at 24% in Wisconsin. Second place was Marco Rubio at 18%. Third place, Ted Cruz at 16%, and then a steep drop off to the rest of the candidates beyond that. So it's notable for sure that the national lead in polling that we've seen from Donald Trump and leads in sort of the early primary states now seem to have translated to Wisconsin. It's also interesting that Rubio scored as well as he did in this Marquette University poll. That's above his sort of national average, and we've seen a lot of institutional Republican support for Marco Rubio from Wisconsin GOP politicians. So it's still on the other hand, I mean, second place is he's still 6 points back, which is a ways. And it's also interesting because when Governor Walker himself dropped out of the presidential race, he made an explicit appeal to the other candidates in the race that they should that others should drop out so that voters could unite behind a positive conservative alternative to the current front runner. And that's a quote he was referring to the front runner then as now Donald Trump. So no one else has dropped out, and now Trump is leading even in Walker's home state.
And then on the Democratic side, what's that two-way race, three-way, but I think two-way in Wisconsin looking like?
Oh, come on. Martin O'Malley weighs in with 1% in this poll. How dare you? The story is mirrors the national story, which is some losses from Hillary Clinton and some, I would say, modest gains for Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side. What it found was basically a dead heat. This is within the poll's margin of error. Hillary Clinton with 45%, Bernie Sanders with 43%. In November, the same poll had Clinton at 50% and Sanders at 41%. So clearly that is a tightening. Worth noting, you may notice these numbers do not add up to 100%. And so there are still some people who are telling the pollsters that they haven't made up their minds, they don't know who they'll vote for. And of course, important to say, that the presidential primary in Wisconsin is not until April, and so there's a lot of other voting in other states before then, and so a lot that can shape that race.
And Rob, before we let you go, let's visit the state legislature. One new item we haven't encountered talking to you yet, a change maybe to the state's vaccination policy proposed by a Democratic lawmaker. What's the story
there?
Yeah,
this is interesting. So Representative Gordon Hintz of Oshkosh has proposed to eliminate one of the exemptions parents in Wisconsin are allowed to claim if they want to opt out of vaccinations. This is the personal conviction waiver that is distinct from religious or medical exemptions, which exist in Wisconsin, would still exist in Wisconsin. But personal conviction, you know, it's a bit of a lower bar than proving a religious or medical exemption. And it's also something that has become more popular in Wisconsin as the anti-vaccination movement has gained traction. There was a CDC study that showed Wisconsin parents exempt their children at more than double the national average from vaccinations. And this, you know, we've seen in California, there's an outbreak of the measles. In different parts of the country, the mumps. Wisconsin itself has had whooping cough outbreaks, and that's those things are you can trace directly to lower rates of vaccinations. So,
that's one to watch. Rob, thanks for joining us. That was State News Editor Robert Mentzer with USA Today Network. He's based in central Wisconsin. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard.
We launched a summer music series last year called Set List, with Wisconsin artists coming into WPR studios for interviews and exclusive performances. Today we follow it up with a special winter edition of Set List.
Madison band Building on Building started out as a duo in 2013, and in the years since, vocalist and guitarist Aaron Fuller has added three other members to fill out that sound.
Fuller and the rest of the band stopped by the WPR studio to play some songs for their latest self-titled album and talk about how they balance their musical lives with career and family responsibilities. Buildings, thanks a lot for coming to play in our studio.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Aaron, let's start at the beginning. What's the origin story of Building on Buildings?
Well, I played in a band with two of the original members of Buildings before Thieves on Holiday. And I kind of stopped when I went through a divorce and moved to Madison from Spring Green. And just wasn't really, had other things going on and didn't really have time for a lot of songwriting. But once I got settled, one of the former members of Buildings, Connie, encouraged me to keep writing. And it just kind of filled the time. And I kind of felt like writing again. And then we turned it into a thing. We brought Sean, that was also in Thieves, back on board, and recruited Eben, and then got Chris halfway through there. And yeah, that's kind of the long and short of it.
You mentioned a divorce, and I know that you've also said that writing for you is therapy sometimes. It's therapeutic.
Absolutely.
How do you work stuff like that out in songs?
Well, I don't like to get too personal, but it definitely helps me work through a lot of things.
Is it just more of a mood where it comes across in the way the song feels?
Yeah, I think music is more therapy just in playing it. And having this practice and having this time, like, with us together just making noise. The lyrics, you know, they are their own thing, and they, like, have in the past and captured time and place in my life. But I think moving on, it's become more of just, like, the catharsis of making a lot of noise with these guys and having a lot of fun along the way.
Eben, I want to ask you, she used the word recruited. As I understand it, you showed up in a jam session and found later, oh, no, you're actually in the band and ready for a tour.
I had no idea.
So press ganged, I think is what the British Navy used to call it. You were hit over the head and woke up
on tour. I got brought
in,
I thought I was going to be playing bass. And they said, well, we really like to have keyboards and other instruments, sort of I'm the guy who plays everything other than regular instruments. and then we were just jamming. And they were like, okay, well, now we need to kind of coalesce these songs and move forward with their band. And I'm like, what? Am I in a band with you guys? So, yeah, it was spontaneous but fun at the same time.
Change track a little and talk about your childhood, right? This is the question, the requisite question about what formed you as a musician. So how did music start you off early in life and get you to where you are now?
I was a huge band nerd. I watched the movie Amadeus when I was like in fourth grade or something, and then I read biographies of Mozart, and when I started sixth grade, I picked up the flute and got to college and figured out that flute really wasn't the cool instrument in the mid-90s. So in 18, I picked up my dad's guitar and picked it up and put it down. And I'm a designer by day, so like it's this whole creative process. And I think it originally stemmed from music back when I was in my formative years. But then I moved over to art for a long time. And now in my free time, I like to use the music thing because it's the same sort of creative process, but it's just a few different muscles in the music. And I could go into a really long discourse on this, but I've thought about it a lot. I have a lot of confidence in my design skills now that I've held them for over 15 years in the industry. But like coming back, like music's always been kind of a hobby. So coming back to it now, like I'm trying to get that same level of confidence just for doing it over and over again. And, you know, finding these failures and finding new ways to do things and learning from those mistakes and pushing forward and just seeing your limit. Although I have to say that it's way different too, because in design, you're not the front of it. So you're way more naked doing music, so to speak, than you are in design, where you can just kind of hang it up there and it speaks for itself. This, I actually have to speak for myself and everybody else.
I want to get into the recording some. You recorded the last album at a fairly well-known studio. Your latest single, which we've heard, was done, Chris, in your basement, which isn't just a random basement. You actually record down there. What's it like recording in that environment versus this familiar home turf for you?
Sean, Eben, and I are all real studio nerds, and we love recording. And I have a studio called Leyden Jar Studios, and we all bump stuff back and forth. So I'll let Eben talk, too. But it's really fun to be in charge of what you're recording and get the exact sound you want. But April Bass is a fantastic recording area, and you have great engineers who can really be in charge of getting the best out of the musicians. So that was a wonderful experience, but it's fun to be in charge.
Well, I wonder, though, given that there are a lot of cooks in the brew here, is it ever like, okay, Eben records this and sends it, Chris doesn't like it, so tweaks that a little, and you're kind of bouncing around, and eventually you got to get together as a committee. Eben wants to get it on this.
There are a lot of cooks, and I think what ends up happening with the band, and this was like this for our first album, was that the ideas get purified, I think, by the iterations of recording. And sometimes what ends up happening is you have one piece that sounds really good at the beginning, and when you fill it with all the other composite pieces, then it doesn't necessarily match. So it's nice to have all the background and skill to bring that to the table.
So besides the basement recording in the studio, there was also the experience at, is it called April Bass, Justin Vernon's place in Fall mm-hmm. Creek? What was that like?
It was like band camp. It was super fun. we all have really busy lives, and it was great to just spend that time all in one place for a number of days. They even have bunk beds up there. So, and just away from everything else, we were just doing music and really dig into the songs, which is great. And we don't often have an opportunity to do that during the few hours we get to practice on a weeknight after work.
And they have a great kitchen there too.
Yeah.
And so we'd like to make breakfast every morning and sit around the table. It was very communal in that way.
That sounds great. It is like band camp.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it, and any of you can jump in on this one, some people are able to be full-time musicians and not have the day job. Maybe they have a family or maybe they don't really, and they're able to just devote all their time to it. How is the work-life-music balance for you guys?
It's a huge balance. I mean, it's really hard, but it's also awesome to have the creative outlet. Everyone generally that I know who's a musician has to work, but it's also great to have the outlet to play great songs and have fun with people who are also very talented musicians.
It's difficult. I mean, just trying to fit it in, especially when there's four of us to coordinate. But I think, you know, we all get enjoyment out of it and make it a priority to some degree. It's really hard, you know, being a single parent to like trying to pigeonhole that in with a full-time job. But luckily we practice where I work, so that's really convenient for me as well.
Read one of you guys said, I'm not sure who it was, that your goal at this point in your lives where you are is not to be the Rolling Stones, it's just to be relevant. What does that mean to you, being relevant?
That's an Eben answer.
I mean, we're all, 40 plus, nearing that. And, when you're 22 and you start a band, you have dreams of being the next great American rock story. But it's not, at this point, it's not about just being successful. It's about making something that has a quality, that you can bring to the table at this point in time in your life, and remaining relevant of a story. I mean, it's, the American cycle is that, young, beautiful people, make art. After 30, you're disposable. You go away because you're not the next thing. You're not Selena Gomez. You're not whoever is the next thing, and that is the counterpoint. Like, our music, I think, is the counterpoint to that. It's like, no, there are stories that need to be told. There are relevant things that come out of people who have been through life experiences that someone who's 22 will never know, being divorced, having kids, losing parents, loved ones, and all this sort of thing. And so it's that idea of being relevant, of telling a story.
You feel like you're telling those stories as you all write the music that you're playing?
Yeah, I definitely think there's a little bit of a darker tone to the music, or even if it sounds happy, the lyrics kind of counter that a bit. I think we try to bring out some of that darkness, and we bring it out in the music so it can stay away from the rest of our lives.
Well, no, wait. Being in your 40s doesn't have to mean darkness, does it?
I don't know. I'm not 40 yet.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I'm not 40 yet either.
Okay, we got to make sure that's in there. The drummer is not 40.
You guys are painting a great picture of middle age here. Thanks for that.
I still got a lot to do.
Aaron, you mentioned coming from Spring Green to Madison. Now, mm-hmm. Your hometown has a lot going on there, a venue that's gotten a lot of attention that we can't actually say the S word, barn, we'll just say. Do you get back to the hometown and check out the scene there?
Well, I'm actually one of the co-founders of the barn.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And I curate the poster series for there and also do a couple posters. So I definitely get back there to see some music. We played there, 2 years ago now, when we were in our infancy stages, before we had a bass player, unfortunately. But
you played with the bass player. It was an El Valiente building on building show.
Yes. We played a show with El Valiente. So Chris has definitely played there before. Sean's played there multiple times. So yes, we do get back there from time to time. It's a really great getaway from the big city.
And before we let you go, what's next for you guys?
Just getting that new material out there and recording a new album.
All right, building on buildings. Thanks a lot for joining us in the studio.
Thank you.
That was Madison Band, Building on Buildings. You can catch them live at the Cabin on the UW-Eau Claire campus on March 12th.
For more on the series set list, head over to WPR.org/setlist.
Stick around, more to come on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert.
Wisconsin faces a shortage of certified nurse assistants, and that's expected to get worse as the state population continues to age.
One of our next guests came up with an idea to solve that problem, to train seniors to take on the role, and her idea is about to become a reality.
Here with us now are Nora Hurdle. She's a reporter at the USA Today Network Wisconsin. Nora, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also with us, Jean Bergener, founder of Senior CNA Academy. Jean, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Well, Nora, first of all, what's the extent of this shortage of certified nursing assistants here in the state?
Well, I went to a meeting last year at North Central Technical College with administrators from nursing homes and care facilities throughout the region, and they were all trying to brainstorm ways to get more CNAs in the door. They were all complaining that they were understaffed by two or three positions. So everyone is feeling the pinch, at least in central Wisconsin. And I know there's also shortages of RNs as well.
And why is there this shortage? Do we know why there's this gap?
Well, it's not an easy job. The CNAs, They do frontline care, so they are there to help people eat, help people use the bathroom, get people dressed in the morning. These are older people or people who have medical needs, but it's not very glamorous work, as you can imagine, and it's also not paid very well. The pay range, I believe, is between $11 and $14. That's average. So people can get better-paying jobs at McDonald's and Walmart. Those retail and restaurant jobs are starting to pay more, and CNA folks that need CNAs, they can't compete with those wages.
And I've for a lot of occupations in the state, there's a concern that baby boomers are aging, leaving those professions, and this is a job where those aging baby boomers are going to need more of these CNAs. Is that part of the problem, Nora?
Yeah, and also a lot of a CNA job is kind of a stepping stone. A lot of people that become nurses or physician assistants will start as a CNA. Not a lot of people work a whole career as a CNA. I mean, I'm sure there are. I'm sure there's a huge core of people that do, and some of them work past retirement age. But yes, some of them are retiring, and a lot of them kind of graduate out of that position.
Let's bring Gene Bergener in on this, trying to come up with a solution. First of all, Gene, what's your path to trying to come up with a solution to this CNA shortage? How did you arrive on the scene and try to come up with something?
Well, my background is in healthcare, so I too, as an administrator in healthcare systems, recognize the need for having a good number of certified nursing assistants. And when I retired from my career in healthcare, you start to look at and decide how can you help to solve some of the problems. And the problem with the CNA shortage that we have is, where are there good quality people that we might begin to say, this is an opportunity for you? And with that, I started to think about, what about seniors in Wisconsin? We're very capable. We're very compassionate. We probably have cared for parents. We could maybe look at meeting that shortage.
And Jean, Nora gave us a couple of sample job duties of these CNAs, the things they do on a day-in, day-out basis. How much do we rely on them in our healthcare system, especially, as Nora mentioned, for caring for aging people, people with special needs?
In most of the post-acute care system, health systems, nursing homes, home health, hospice, we do use a great number of certified nursing assistants. And it's to meet the basic daily needs, bathing, grooming, going to the bathroom, dining. So we use a large number of certified nursing assistants.
So, and if they're doing these things, then the nurses, the physician's assistants, the doctors themselves maybe are spending more of their time doing the more directly medical sort of tasks. Is that right?
Well, exactly. They're doing the assessments on what the patient's needs will be, and then doing all of the necessary documentation and executing a plan of care for that patient.
We're talking to Jean Bergener. She's founder of the Senior CNA Academy. We'll get into that in just a moment. And also with us, Nora Hurdle from the USA Today Network, Wisconsin, talking about a shortage of certified nursing assistants here in the state and what people are trying to do about it. You can join in, by the way, if you're involved in healthcare. You've seen this shortage firsthand. Call 800-642-1234. So, Gene, let's talk about the Senior CNA Academy. You mentioned, hey, we've got this pool of potential nursing assistants out there, our seniors. So what are you trying to do to get them the training, the skills they need to get them into these jobs?
Well, to pilot this program, it was really necessary to begin the discussions with an education source. And that is in Wausau, that's North Central Technical College, who does all of the certified nursing assistant training for our area. So I met with North Central and said, what do you think of this idea? And after, conversation, we thought this could possibly work. And again, the expectation is that maybe the senior would work one day a week, 2 days a week. We're not necessarily expecting a senior to work full time. And then it was to look for a pilot site where we could do the training and where we could actually put senior CNAs in place. And our pilot facility is Pinecrest Nursing Home, a facility owned by Lincoln County. And they were very receptive to the idea, especially because they have had in the past their own CNAs who have grown older and close to retirement and actually stay on and work part-time or casual status for the facility. So they thought this would work. To have more would be better.
And are you finding people, are you finding recruits out there, people who want to sign up and go through the program?
We have an initial class that will be starting the end of February. So, yes, we're hoping with getting the information out, and we thank you for getting the information to the public. This is something that most people would not be saying, this is what I'm going to do. But it's the aha moment when you hear of the potential. And again, because so many of us already know what it is like to care for a parent.
And Nora, you wrote about this and other efforts to deal with a CNA shortage. What other kind of things are we seeing communities try to do? Seniors here, how about recruiting new people into the profession?
I mentioned in my story that there's a high school in the Green Bay area that's starting to offer training for seniors to move right into a CNA position as soon as they graduate. I believe you can you can work as a CNA as young as 16, but you can't use a Hoyer lift, which is what a lot of CNAs need to use to move people around who are immobile. So I think a lot of places don't really want to hire folks under 18. But training kids in high school gives them a leg up that they can jump into one of those positions as soon as they're done with their degree.
I'm going to bring in a caller now at 800-642-1234. We've got Deborah on the line in Eau Claire. Deborah, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Deborah?
Well, I was listening to your program, and it just occurred to me, my niece is actually going on to nursing school, and she's been trying for well over a year to get into a CNA program down in her area, and they take so few students that she's had such a hard time even getting into a program. So she actually is now in nursing school at Oshkosh, which they require them to have a CRNA to get into the program. Hmm. She's going to be coming to Eau Claire because we actually have more CNA programs available in this area and staying with us just to try and get her CNA.
Deborah, thanks a lot for that call. That's interesting. First of all, Nora, in your reporting, did you encounter concerns about that the CNA programs that are out there are taking in a limited and presumably then graduating a limited number of future CNAs?
Well, I've heard from Lorraine Zaromsky, she's the Dean of Health Occupations at North Central Technical College, that there are some cumbersome regulations at the state level regarding who can teach CNAs, and they would like to see some of those relaxed a little bit. So that's one hurdle. But I believe at North Central Healthcare, they are making an effort. They've got a nursing home there to train their own CNAs. So if you can be hired without having gone through that training, and they'll pay for it as long as you agree to stay with them after you get through the training. So I think we might see more of that too.
And Gina, I want to jump in, Nora, and get Gene in on this. In your previous life as a healthcare administrator, was this a concern that for especially like this, the CNA, that not enough of them were coming out of the schools?
At least where in the areas that I worked, we did not have a difficulty with the volume of training that was available. Usually, I think you hit it on the head in the beginning where you talk about very few people actually come into the CNA job and plan to stay there for 20 years. Many, you do get students who are nursing students and come into the program and they are required to be a CNA. So maybe work 6 months, a very short time, and then go on to their next medical career. So it is very much a transient position as people move through healthcare professions. But to answer your question, no, we have the volume we need, at least so far, the volume of training we need, yes.
We're talking to Jean Bergener. She's founder of the Senior CNA Academy. Also with us, Nora Hurdle, public issues investigator at the USA Today Network, Wisconsin, looking at the certified nurse shortage in Wisconsin and one idea, bringing seniors on board to help solve that problem.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Does this sound like a good idea to you? Is it something you'd like to get involved in? Do you work in healthcare, and are you seeing the shortage? Are you a CNA, and what kind of work do you do? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard, and we're continuing our conversation now with Nora Hurdle, public issues investigator at the USA Today Network, Wisconsin, and Jean Bergener, founder of Senior CNA Academy, talking about the certified nurse shortage in Wisconsin. Jean's working to recruit and train seniors to help fill that gap.
I'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Does this sound like a good plan to get more certified nursing assistants on the job? Does this sound like a good idea to you? And do you work as a CNA? Talk about what the job is like, why people might get into it. And if you're a senior hearing this, you want to find out more? Would you want to do this? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. Claudia is with us in Shell Lake. Claudia, hi.
Hi, how are you? I was actually just listening in, and I worked as a CNA for a couple of years. I'm still certified, although I decided to retire from the career. My main observation was that CNAs are very underpaid and very underappreciated. In my area, they get around $8 or $9 an hour. And one of the main reasons why I decided to leave was because it wasn't worth it, breaking my back and ending up disabled and not being able to support myself. And the problem also in our area is that the nursing homes don't offer any full-time positions, so there are no benefits. And some don't even offer holiday pay. So we are... CNAs are a very big disadvantage.
Claudia, thank you so much for sharing your story. Jean, from having a healthcare administrator, is there any kind of movement out there to say, hey, if we want to keep the CNAs in the job, we need to pay them more, better benefits, and just a little more general appreciation along the way?
Oh, I fully support the concept that we do need to be able to pay all staff in healthcare a good wage. Difficulty comes when... the reimbursement that nursing homes in particular receive come from Medicaid, primarily Medicaid funding and some Medicare funding, and those are limited funds. It's not like a retail business where you can just increase your rates. That's not possible because we're a contractor to the federal government.
And Nora, did you hear that from some other sources you talked to, that there's a little bit of a bind here based on those reimbursements?
Yeah, nursing homes, skilled nursing facilities, I believe that a lot of them rely on Medicaid and Medicare for 80% of their budgets, which leaves them very little wiggle room to offer raises to their CNAs. I know that there's some state associations that are trying to lobby for increased reimbursements at the state level, but, you know, everyone... That's a really sticky issue, trying to get more money for Medicaid.
Claudia, thanks a lot for that call. We'll go next to Harriet in La Crosse. Harriet, hi.
There's a couple of relatives of mine that are nursing assistants, and they do not get enough hours. These people are, institutions are for profit, and as soon as the census goes down, then the hours get cut. One of my relatives just had her hours from 5 days a week down to 3 days a week. So there's nurses' assistants out there, but they're not using them.
Harriet, thanks for that call. So another reason maybe, Gene, why it's hard to keep people in the business, if that's the case, that like many service workers, they can't count on getting the hours they need.
Are you asking that
yeah,
of me?
Yeah, Gene.
Again, when you're looking at... a restricted revenue from Medicare, Medicaid, if you don't have the patients to care for, you don't have the revenue or the income coming in order to just have staff there. So it's very much if we have staff, if we have patients, we have staff. And so that can be a little difficult.
All right. Can I
jump in? Yeah,
go ahead, Nora.
I've heard a little bit of the opposite problem here, that there's so few CNAs that those who are in the position have to work mandatory overtime, because when you do have those patients, you have to fill shifts, because a lot of people can't be left alone if they can't feed themselves or use the bathroom by themselves. So that leads to an increased burnout and more turnover.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, those are the stories I've heard in central Wisconsin.
Well, and Jean, bringing it back to these seniors who, as you mentioned, would probably be working part-time, is that maybe a safety valve for when more help is needed? They could maybe pick up two shifts in the week instead of one, so we wouldn't necessarily see that overtime and that burnout.
And that's an excellent comment. You calling it a safety valve, it gives you additional staff that you can call in when you have a large need. It's perfect. It could work. It's going to work really, really well.
Bring in another caller now as we talk about certified nursing assistants in Wisconsin. Many facilities saying, hey, we got a shortage. One of our two guests saying, hey, we've got seniors out there who are in some cases ready, willing, and able to do the work with a little training. We'll go next to Linda in Monona. Linda, hi.
Hi. How are you?
Go ahead, Linda.
Yes. my point that I wanted to get across is that I was an LPN for probably, 25 years, and about 20 of those years I worked in nursing homes and rehab centers. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about is, I lost my train of thought, just give me 1 second. Okay,
go ahead, Linda.
Sorry. Yes, the problem is that I worked with a lot of younger people, and those younger people ended up having physical problems. They ended up hurting themselves, even with Hoyer lifts and all these things taken into account. Mm-hmm. How do they expect seniors who are already, I'm 61, and I'm already starting to have a lot of problems with joints and things like that. It doesn't seem, I know it's a very worthwhile thing she's doing, but how does she expect seniors to do this?
Interesting.
I think what they really need to do is raise their salaries. How much a month in an average nursing home?
And Linda, we've kind of covered that salary point a bit already, but that issue of seniors not being able to do this kind of physical work, Jean, is that a concern?
Well, of course, for any time you have a job, there are going to be requirements, physical requirements for the person. Would the Senior Academy be for every person? No, but you also look that many, many seniors are very physically capable, and the use of equipment such as Hoyer lifts or any of the standing lifts, when used properly, do not injure the employees. So there's a great opportunity here.
All right. Thanks for that call. Linda, go ahead, Nora.
Yeah, Jean, you mentioned this to me when we talked earlier, and I think it's a really great point that, a lot of young people get into the CNA positions because it's fairly accessible and really in demand, but 18-year-olds don't necessarily have the same capacity for compassion as seniors do, and that I think that that's something we haven't talked about yet, that older, 55 plus, this group of people that could come in as CNAs, as long as they've got the basic, their basic faculties, they also might have an increased level of compassion to do this kind of work, and it does require compassion.
And that's really interesting. And Jean, you had mentioned that a lot of these seniors might have already done this kind of care for, say, their parents. So they might be taking care of their peers in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. And I think the other great opportunity right now in healthcare, we talk about population health and we talk about educating the population about healthcare. So a senior who goes and successfully completes the Senior Academy also gains a great deal of medical information in order to care also for themselves and others. So it's a, well, what do we say? It's a win-win. It's a win for the new senior who's going to be a CNA with getting a great deal of medical information, and it's a win for the patient who now has a very compassionate senior who understands and can maybe relate much better to the patient.
And Jean, talks through the timeline now. You mentioned we've got our first class of recruits ready to start getting trained. What's the timeline? When will they start showing up in a facility near us?
They will be starting on the end of February, and it's a 10-week course. It's not full time. Much of it is online, and then we'll be ready then. But they do a clinical rotation also, and that will be at Pinecrest in Merrill.
And Nora, as we wrap up, this is a part of a solution, but you talk to some people in the industry, you say this isn't the whole solution. It's going to take a lot to solve the shortage, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there's some policy fixes that folks in the industry really want to see, whether it's regulation or increased reimbursements. They say, have training more people to do this work, yeah, that's going to help chip away, but there's systemic changes that need to happen as well.
Well, thanks to both of our guests. We've been talking to Nora Hurdle, public issues investigator at the USA Today Network Wisconsin, and Jean Bergener. She's founder of the Senior CNA Academy, talking about a shortage of certified nursing assistants in Wisconsin and an effort by bringing seniors on board to start chipping away at that shortage.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. News from NPR and WPR is up next here on Central Time on the Ideas Network.